useless. You won't solve anything this way. Anne-Marie, stop this. Please.
Legs gone to sleep. The border. Beer, it's... No, another bee. Bordon. Yes, yeah. Spanish border. River. Bidasoa. Marshal Soult crossed the Bidasoa going north. Not much of a general. But neither was Wellington. 5 years to win a war with everything in his favour. Soult was fine at moving men. No much good at a fight. I'll have to show the marshal how to fight.
King of the Rainy Country by Nicholas Freeling. Dramatised for radio by Philip Martin, with Martin Jarvis as Inspector Vandervalk and Jackie Smith-Wood as Anne-Marie. King of the Rainy Country.
Drink.
Strong. Spanish, yeah.
Vile.
Stay here.
All right. Leaving me that salt. Leaving me to die on a hillside. I don't even know if it's France or Spain. My bones will be trampled over by illegals trying to enter. No one will be interested. No one. Least of all that tripe hound. Salt. Leaving me here, Marshal.
Be a good boy.
Who are you?
I'm not Marshal Soult. Keep still.
Where is he? Marshal Soult?
Dead. Some 150 years. I'm going to put you to sleep now. Just a tiny... Yes. There.
That didn't hurt. I'm like the king of a rainy country. Rich and impotent, young and very old.
Really? You've been too long in the sun. We no sooner get you off Marshal Soult than you start quoting Baudelaire at us.
King, rich, impotent country.
There. All gone. All those people. Sleepy by.
Last of the marshals.
Oh, my poor boy.
Well, Arlette. You look... We're not on holiday.
No. Just rest. Rest.
Must get down the slope. Slalom. Ski.
Sleep. Sleep. Oh, my poor boy.
I've seen you.
Yes. Out on the hill with Marshal Soult, remember?
What? Who the hell are you?
Dr. Capdoos.
How am I?
You've been shot.
Yes. I remember some of it. I'm a detective.
From Amsterdam. Can you recall Amsterdam, Inspector?
Inspector Vandervalk. Yes, I remember. Some things. This isn't Amsterdam.
You're in Biarritz. A nice clinic. A farmer heard the shots, came to you, gave you brandy that nearly killed you. And now you're with us here, all post-operative care will be given. You've been lucky. Shooting downhill is always tricky. The bullet perforated an intestine, just missed the big artery, touched your spine, made a mess of your pelvis, and exited, taking most of your left buttock with it.
I can't move my leg.
No. Paralyzed. Might be for some time, but not forever, hopefully.
I can't remember why I was there.
Oh, you will, I'm sure. You've had the best surgeon, Professor Gachassin from Toulouse. He's confident that within a year you'll be able to ski again.
I don't ski.
You talked about skiing a lot.
Did I?
Yes. Now, sleep. That's what you need. Sleep. Mind and body. Sleep.
Arlette?
Yes? Oh, sorry, I was dozing.
Can you find me some Baudelaire poems in the town?
I thought you didn't like him. Too self-pitying, you said.
If you see any.
Yes, I'll look tomorrow.
Yes. Could you also ask the local police to send in someone sensible? I've remembered what happened.
Lyra, Commissaire. How are you?
I'm fine. Apart from a hole you could drive a truck through. Give me one of those cigarettes.
Hellboy, you're not supposed to smoke.
Neither are you in here.
All right. I understand you went after a maniac with a rifle for me. I'm very grateful. Otherwise it might have been me lying in bed. Strasbourg can't understand why the two of you came herring down here, you and the woman.
There's a man called Canisius, a businessman. He was here. He went into Spain to look at some houses he owns. Her idea was to assassinate him as he returned. She was on the hillside waiting. I tried to stop it. I was sure there would be suicide. Was there?
Yes. Toe job. No head left at that range. I have to make a report for the parquet. I can't make anything of the story I got from Strasbourg. You know the full story, they say.
Yes. Yes, I do. Now?
But just tell me something. Anything that will look good in a report.
Nothing I know ever looks good in a report. I'm tired. I need to think of it. Can you come back tomorrow?
Yeah.
And bring me some cigarettes. I can hide them. People keep bringing me flowers. Here. Chuck the faggins away.
You had a narrow squeak. When you're better, we'll drink to that. I'll bring you cigarettes.
Thanks.
Smoking. My God. Policeman. You're like a pair of silly kids.
Sister, did you know there's a defective rear light on your little Fiat? Get it fixed as a good girl.
Comfortable?
All right.
The commissar should be here soon.
Yes. We're at the end of a story that started once upon a time in a rainy country. There was a king.
Baudelaire.
I wanted to check. It's all here.
But it didn't end in a rainy country. Countryside is bone dry, baked.
It's quite a famous spot where I nearly got it. Junot crossed the Baie de Sauer going north. Same place where, 7 years later, Soult crossed going south. 150 years later, the last of the Marshals waited for a Dutch businessman to halt so that she could make him pay for everything.
Instead, she shot you, then herself.
A pity.
Feel like going through it all? No? I can cancel.
No, we can make a beginning. I've nothing else to do.
Your cigarettes.
Thank you.
And an ashtray.
Oh, good.
Easier to dump the lot out onto the flower beds. One trip to the window rather than 24. Here.
Thanks. I think I have events in order. I have to say that a lot of the stuff might look fanciful in a report.
Psychology?
Afraid so.
Tell me what you have.
Inspector van der Valk.
Yes?
There's a guy downstairs who wants to talk to someone in authority.
And what's he look like?
A sort of rich guy. His coat's got a fur collar, shoes like mobile mirrors.
Send him up.
Inspector.
It was a cold day in early March. Everyone had colds. I didn't, but I let my wife would keep stuffing my pockets full of tissues, just in case.
You were the duty inspector.
I am. My name is van der Valk.
Canisius.
Yes, he looked rich, sleek, well-cut overcoat, a silk paisley scarf, grey trilby. Everything looked as if it had been bought 10 minutes ago. His face was big and bald, Roman nose, very black eyebrows, alert, dark little eyes, wide mouth drooping at the corners. He sat down, lit a cigar with a gold lighter. I lit a cheap French fag with a match.
I must ask you to listen to a slightly unusual tale. You have heard of a firm called the Sopexy?
Vaguely.
Sopex made a considerable fortune during the last century. The founder of the firm was called Marshall. The name is still represented by a Monsieur Sylvestre Marshall, who inherited and expanded a very great fortune. I will quote no figures, but you may take my word for it that this is one of the greatest fortunes in private hands anywhere.
All right, I take your word.
Monsieur Marshall is now 80 years of age, but he visits the Paris office daily. Some few years ago, he settled, for reasons I need not go into, a very large proportion of his wealth on his only son, Jean-Claude Marshall, who lives in Amsterdam, where the office of the Sopex is administered by me. Jean-Claude is now 42. He is the head of publicity and public relations for the European offices.
That sounds impressive, is it?
No, Inspector, it is not. The Sopex is an investment trust where trade is still carried on. It is only in raw materials. Our advertising budget is laughable. Our public relations, virtually non-existent. I do not wish to give the impression that Jean-Claude is an incompetent, tolerated only for his name. He earns a large salary for meeting our business contacts all over the world. He also commands the very large fortune I have mentioned. Income from this flows into balances held in banks throughout Europe. All of these accounts are under different names.
Why different?
They were opened at various times by his father during periods of political unrest.
And he's in trouble, is he?
We do not know if he is in any trouble. He has chosen to disappear. If there is trouble, naturally, we wish to prevent it. We do not wish his father, an elderly gentleman, to know of it. We wish to safeguard a number of things. Health, property, the good name of our company.
All right. If I understand things right, it can't interfere with company affairs.
We would not wish for bad publicity, or indeed any publicity. We prefer discretion.
Mm. Has any reason or motive to act in a prejudicial way?
None.
Mr. Canisius, do you sketch a man of no great parts, restricted to inconsequential activities, and a company he owns, in a manner of speaking? Might he feel slighted, some real or imagined grievance against the company?
You have not quite the right picture.
Oh.
Jean-Claude Marshall has many abilities. Numerous positions of real responsibility have been offered to him. He has always rejected them. I do not understand why. If I have one criticism of Jean-Claude Marshall, it is that he prefers to use charm rather than engage his mind.
What were his interests? What did engage his mind?
He was an excellent horseman, skier, driver of racing cars. He played polo, sailed yachts. All the conventional pursuits of a very rich young man. He was gifted at all of them, though I am told that he lacked perseverance. always loosened the rein at the moment when he should have tightened it. He did not want to win enough. I have heard him complain that everything was too easy.
He's married?
Yes. Mm-hmm. I will forestall your next question. It is not a stormy marriage. No upheavals or scandals.
Does he chase women?
In a desultory way.
You mean he's seen occasionally in restaurants with other men's wives?
Yes.
Mm. It comes down to this. He's vanished without fuss or furore, without indication as to where or why. Yes?
That is an exact summary.
And you simply want him found?
But it is so puzzling. He had seemed to settle into his part with the firm.
Mr. Canisius, why'd he come to me? You confirm he's done nothing illegal. There's no evidence of fraud or false pretense, no evidence of kidnapping or abduction. He's just missing. There's such a large fortune involved, I can see how that's disturbing, but isn't this a job for a private detective?
I do not think I need to answer that question, Mr. van der Valk. I do think, however, that you may well receive an answer to it.
You have had a call from a Mr. Canisius.
Yes, sir. A missing person.
You will act upon his request to find this Jean-Claude Marshall. You will find him, van der Valk. You yourself personally. You understand?
I don't.
You're detached from your normal duties. Your superiors will be notified. You'll take steps to find this missing person. Are you going to say something?
I'm to drop everything.
Yes. You're not permitted to use official transport or official channels. Your expenses will be allowed, within reason. You need no help. You will work quietly, discreetly. Mm-hmm. Courtesy, van der Valk, caution, tact. Quiet, huh? Dispatch energy acuity, but quiet, huh?
Yes, sir.
You may be called on to cross the frontier. This is authorized. Well, that's all. Begin at once. Mr. Canisius expects you in his office at 2.
Sit down, Mr. van der Valk. I will tell you outright that I don't wish you to question the staff here.
I will tell you equally outright that I will question whom I please, discreetly, according to my instructions.
I have made very careful inquiries. No eccentricity or irregularities have been found.
Mr. Canisius, you must find someone else.
I make no restrictions outside this building. I will give you the addresses of Mrs. Marshall, a doctor, a notary, and the last person known to have talked to Mr. Marshall, his personal secretary. Please understand, Inspector. You can see who you like.
But outside the building.
I will give you my home address. Telephone if you wish. Come to see me if necessary. But do not, please, call or telephone here.
Do I carry the plague?
One call from a policeman is explainable. Two or more, and people wonder, suspect, that Jean-Claude may not be on holiday at all.
All right.
Telephone me from time to time, Mr. van der Valk. Shall we say at least once a week? I am always at home.
He'd written the details of who I could see on a piece of paper of banknote quality. It simply said, from F.R. Canisius, and carried the firm's business address in discreet gold lettering. At the notary's, there was nothing but ice and frost. Mr. Marshall's private affairs, investments, finances were not the affair of the police. The doctor had given him a routine check only weeks ago. Clean bill of health. No psychological troubles. Nothing. I was near the Kaisergracht. Lots of expensive flats in that area. But the address of Mrs. Marshall turned out to be a house. A beautiful bastion of aristocratic privacy. I got past the major domo by writing Canisius on the back of my business card. I waited in the hallway. Oh, my friend, that hall. Tall, narrow, a pale pink marbled floor, painted walls, apple green and pale gold, panels of white stucco work, bunches of grapes and vine leaves in low relief. The majordomo, replete in yellow and black striped waistcoat, appeared through a wrought iron gate.
Madame will be happy to receive you, sir. Allow me. Will monsieur have patience for just a moment longer?
I was in a small orangery. There were stairs in the same pink marble. On my right, in an alcove, stood a small marble nude. It looked like a Rodin. There was a bronze boy at the foot of the stair. It was designed to be looked at from above. I climbed a few steps, gaped down at it. It was a Donatella. Maybe I spoke the name, I don't know. But a voice replied from behind me.
You're quite right. The bronze is to be looked at in just that way.
She was wearing a silk house coat, narrow vertical stripes, olive green and silver grey.
Sorry, I was staring. I was admiring.
That does not matter in the least. Perhaps we will go in here, shall we? Please sit down, Mr. Van der Valk, and be quite comfortable. You have plenty of time.
Yes.
Good. So do I. Would you like some port?
Oh, not by myself.
No, I like port.
She had clear skin. Clear, classic features. Perhaps a little too cold for some tastes. Dark blue-green eyes. A lot of brown hair held back by a velvet bandeau. Figure full, but, well, difficult to see in a housecoat. A lot of blood, a lot of race, a lot of breeding. She gave me a small port. Sat down in a chair. Sat very upright. Convent trained.
You like the statues? You like this room?
Very much. English, 18th century.
Heppelwhite. That piece there is William and Mary. We are going to get along. Did you know The Naked Girl was by Rodin?
I didn't, but I thought it might have been.
We are going to get along. You're obviously enjoying that. Have some more. Get it yourself.
Oh, thanks. Yeah, I will.
Mr. Van der Valk, what do you know about the errand you've been sent on?
That your husband is missing. That I've been asked to find him. Beyond that, absolutely nothing.
Was that all Mr. Canisius had to say?
A superficial sketch of a life and a character.
He has not a high opinion of either. He isn't necessarily right. He is only a businessman. One day he was drinking tea here from Sèvres, China. I told him it was Sèvres since he asked. His immediate reaction was to tell me that three isolated Sèvres dinner plates had just brought an unheard-of sum at Drouot. Soul of an auctioneer. My husband knows about such things and loves them.
Do you want him back?
That is a fairly complex question. It might be for everyone's good if he came back. Since he has gone deliberately, I'm not sure.
You don't think he'll come back on his own eventually?
Oh, that's hard to say, even for someone who knows him as well as I do. I don't think he will. I could be wrong.
Did he become tired of being reined in?
No. You say that because you only have Canisius to go on. It isn't that simple.
Well, perhaps you could tell me more.
I had decided that it would be a waste of time to tell anyone anything. Perhaps I am mistaken. I simply want to convey to you that this is not simple. It is very little use just asking me if I know where he went.
Do you know where he went?
No.
Tell me about you.
I live alone in this house. I have two children, both girls. They are away at school in Belgium. There are no more Marshalls. I am Belgian. My name was Demeus. My father was a baron. I used to be a ski champion. A champion means when you are amongst the 10 best. I had a bad fall when I was 21, but I can still ski. I met my husband when he was among the 10 best also.
Oh, a marriage of champions.
I suppose. Jean-Claude went to a public school in England. I've sometimes wondered if it didn't do him a lot of harm. He never learned any philosophy. I don't pretend to understand him.
Mr. Canisius told me he sometimes chased women in a desultory way.
Quite observant for a grocer. Other women were like everything else with Jean-Claude, of interest for a fortnight. It didn't worry me. He liked his home. He liked me in it. I say without pride that I was the only woman who had any meaning for him.
Yet he's gone missing.
Maybe I failed him somewhere.
There is one stupid, obvious, rude question I have to ask. Were you ever unfaithful to him?
No. I'm quite Spanish about such things.
What, moral?
Yes.
Oh, thank you for seeing me.
If you give your name on the telephone, this house will be open to you at any time.
Thank you again. May I ask your name, madame?
Anne-Marie.
Your health, Miss Kramer.
Thank you. And yours.
Ah, that's good. I expect you know why I've asked to see you.
About Mr. Marshall.
Mm-hmm.
Mr. Canisius asked me to send photographs and details of his recent schedule to your office.
Kind of him?
I have thought and thought, but I can't recall anything unusual. He was just as usual, quiet, polite. Not at all a difficult person, once you knew his little ways.
Well, some men talk to their assistants about where they've been, who they've seen, how they feel. No?
Only enough to be sociable.
On the last day you worked together, can you remember what he talked about? A person, a thing, a book, a play?
Only, well, nothing specific. Something about how dismal the town looked. It was one of those grey afternoons.
What did you say?
Oh, something inconsequential.
How inconsequential?
I come from Brabant, and I said something about that at least they had a carnival this time of year to cheer people up.
Mm-hmm. What did he say to that?
Just a vague comment that, yes, a carnival would liven life up a little.
No tension? Any odd reaction?
Not at all.
I'm very grateful.
Hardly worth a large whiskey.
Do you know his wife at all?
Never even seen her. He never talked. Very discreet.
Who's doing his work?
I am, most of it. Not the wining and dining. Just the office.
Well, thanks for your time. Oh, don't forget your shopping. Yeah. Anything nice for supper?
Deep-free shrimps with scrambled eggs.
Bon appetit. I still had one call to make, a colleague of Jean-Claude's, a Mr. Libouda. We met at the Amstel Hotel for 5 minutes. He had little to add, except for one fragment.
Yes, we had dinner here. I had to go to Köln the next day. Came back from there yesterday. Just missed their carnival, thank God.
Yesterday was the last Monday before Lent. Rosenmontag in the Rhineland. Hijinks in Köln.
Old Jean-Claude seemed a bit wistful. Said he liked carnivals.
After that, I called it a day. Went home to Arlette. She was dressmaking. And on the TV were scenes from a beer festival in Germany.
Turn that off if you like.
Beats me how the Germans hold so much beer.
Bladders of iron.
Secret of their success. What's for supper?
A ham omelette with spinach.
Oh! The next day, Arlette went to church to have her forehead marked with ash. I went to my office. Both different acts of penance. I sorted through the business schedules and the photographs of Jean-Claude, so kindly sent by Mr. Canisius. Why was he so anxious to involve me? More than anxious, eager. The photograph showed a good-looking man staring out at the camera, not self-conscious, but with an expression that seemed to say, "What's the point of this?" Although turned 40, there was a shock of wavy hair. The nose was bony, distinctive. That might help for recognition purposes. His travel schedule had been a busy one. New York, Paris, Germany, Colmar, Köln, Munich, Köln, Köln again. I don't know about you, but when I've got no facts to go on, I get superstitious. Köln had come up 3 times. I'd been there once to arrest a Czech fraudster. Delightful company. Got 18 months. I had a friend in Köln, a German policeman who'd helped tidy up the arrest details. Heinz Stössel. Fine German name. I tried to contact Heinz, but he was busy with the aftermath of carnival crime. I left a message for him to telephone when he could.
Still here, Van der Valk?
thought you'd be running up the expenses somewhere suitably decadent.
Not me, Chief Inspector. This office is decadent enough.
You've fallen for a nice soft job out of the private bin. How'd you do it?
Blind chance. Excuse me. Yeah?
Vandervelk?
Heinz, how are the revels?
Gets worse every year. Dustbin men swore they'd go on strike. 3 taxi drivers were attacked. 147 auto thefts and the bill for broken glass. No wonder the insurance people won't pay for carnival damage.
How's your trade in missing persons? Hello? Heinz?
You clairvoyant or something? You haven't found a girl, have you?
No. I've lost a man.
We've lost a girl. The press got it before we did.
You have my sympathy.
They found her carnival costume in the woods. Guess the headlines.
Naked beauty disappears?
Yes.
A starting point?
A barman saw her on Rose Monday with what is described as a middle-aged man. A handsome middle-aged man. Now tell me your troubles.
Missing millionaire.
I suppose he's handsome and middle-aged.
I could be called that. I'm not suggesting anything, but Kern has come up 3 or 4 times, and before he disappeared, he was talking vaguely about the carnival.
So was everyone else.
Yeah, I know.
Got a photo?
In my pocket.
Not much, is it? I mean, to go on.
No, but I'm going to catch the plane anyway.
Not serious.
Why not? I'm on guaranteed expenses.
When I arrived at Kern and booked into my hotel, there was a message saying Heinz Stössel would see me at 6:30 at a bar, the Rhine Terrace. He'd also enclosed a transcript of the few details available on the missing girl. Her name was Dagmar Schwievelbein, another fine German name. She was almost 18 and had been chosen for the carnival as a Tanzmariechen, one of the 20 most beautiful girls who attend the Prince of the Carnival. She'd lived away from home for a year, worked in a sports shop, was tall and slim. I could picture her in a kind of hussar's tunic, tights, high boots, and a Cossack fur hat. This costume had been found abandoned in a wood with no signs of struggle or trampled ground. A naked girl had disappeared into the cold March wind. Köln looked like it had a hangover. At the bar, waiting for Heinz Stössel, I couldn't decide what to drink. Not schnapps or vermouth, nor beer. Then, on a high shelf, covered in dust, there was a bottle whose shape I recognized. Gentian.
How do you serve it?
Put some ice in an ordinary water glass. Sip. And fill it half full.
First time I've ever done one.
Right. Thank you.
Cheers.
I read the paper. Naked beauty disappears, said the headline. When Heinz arrived, we exchanged greetings, ordered coffee, got down to police business.
The photograph of your millionaire, the barman over there, was the one who saw Dagmar and the famous handsome middle-aged man. That's why I said we'd meet at this place. Yes? We talked yesterday about the girl.
I remember.
What about this man? Was that the guy she was with?
Don't think so. I served thousands the last few days. Anyway, he wore a ski cap.
If we take out the hair, what about the face then? The nose. It'd be the peak of the cap, the jut of the nose. Drinking with a beautiful girl. He must have looked from one to the other.
Yes. Keep your hand... Yes. Could be him.
Well, it was as near a positive identification as we were going to get. Heinz left to follow his set routine. I went to see the girl's parents. They knew nothing. The wife, like a washed-out watercolour. The husband, with a surprisingly naive innocence and belief in the good of people. I wondered if his daughter had the same quality, and how it might just fascinate a jaded man like Jean-Claude Marchal. I had no authority even to read a gas meter in Köln. I had to depend on Heinz and his routine. He'd had the photograph circulated everywhere. No success, apart from a garage owner who thought it bore some resemblance to a man called Kellerman he'd sold a new Porsche to at the start of the carnival. Heinz went on checking down his lists, looking for a coordinate.
I think there might be a link here. A bit inconclusive, but a large quantity of ski equipment and clothes, including some for a woman, were bought in Munchen.
Description?
Just a tall, self-assured man. What struck them is he signed a very large check without referring to the number of items on the bill. There was something else unusual. Everything had to be delivered to the station luggage office. Check on a local bank. Munchen looked for more checks in the same name. They found one at a travel agency. 2 first-class tickets to Innsbruck.
What's the name on the check?
A funny name. Ney. N-A-Y.
Ney. Ney. Oh, what a fool. Heinz, bring Munchen up. Ask them to check on the spelling. Oh, what an idiot I am.
Munchen. 167, miss. Thank you. Harry Schneesen. Stutzel here in Köln. This check in the ski shop, did the operator get the name right? He's checking. Mm. Nay, yes. Okay, thanks. How did you know? Easy slip. It's an E, not an A. N-E-Y.
Nay is the name of one of Napoleon's marshals. Kellerman is another. Absurdly childish, but Jean-Claude's numerous bank accounts in Europe are probably all under the various names of Napoleon's marshals. The name of the man who bought the Porsche, Kellerman. Yep, born German in the Tsar. I've been thinking and thinking where I knew the name.
Nay, Kellerman. They're both your chap.
Can't be anyone else.
Gone to Innsbruck. What about the auto?
Dumped. Probably left with the keys in on a city street. It'll be stolen within hours. Not reported to you, stolen.
A brand new Porsche?
We just haven't been keeping pace with this kind of mind. That new Porsche means about as much to my man as a bus ride to you and me.
No wonder we miss them. I checked on every stolen vehicle. Anyway, we have the 2 linked. We know he went off with a girl. Find him, and we find her. Or the other way around. I'll need permission to ring Innsbruck.
No need, I'm going there.
Without authority?
I don't need it. All I have to do is to walk up to him and say the party's over. The whole drama will collapse and the girl will just come home. What can it be, after all? Just the whim of a rich man? A romantic escapade? She'll have come to no harm. He'll be watching the German papers, Heinz. Amusing himself, no doubt.
I won't let the press get it. Do you need left to the airport?
The plane journey took longer than I thought. I began to think about Anne-Marie Marshall. Not so simple, she had said. Why had Canisius insisted on me, a full inspector of the criminal brigade? Could there be something more to it all? Was Jean-Claude a darker, more disturbed creature than the bored playboy everyone had suggested? I didn't know how disturbed he was. Not then. Innsbruck was surrounded by snowy mountains, cold, and was a great deal busier than I'd imagined. I had to hunt for a hotel room. Then I reported to the local police, met the local commissaire, a man called Bratfisch. That's a fine Austrian name. Blonde, burly, tough. Commissaire Bratfisch.
Fine place you've picked. We've got all the hotel registrations, but the valley's full of chalets and houses. It'll take a year to check.
Look, it isn't my fault the couple came
no,
here.
No, of course not. Your birds could be in the Vorarlberg by now or in the Engadine. They get worked up in Köln about a girl that's disappeared, but here it's a daily occurrence. You know how many girls I've had reported missing?
18.
There goes to their heads. They get seduced by ski bums and fall off the tree like cherries. 6 weeks later, they turn up without a sou asking for a ticket home.
I didn't expect it to be such a problem for you.
No, I'll help you all I can. Next week will be different. These last few days are the worst. Last ski classic of the season. 20% more visitors, 20% more crime, no increase in police. If you haven't found them by next week, come back. It'll be different when the ski circus has left town. Servus.
Servus.
He wasn't wrong. The town was bursting with the followers of the ski racers. The Innsbruck Anschluss was as classic as the Kandahar run. Handsome middle-aged men were everywhere. And if they weren't handsome, they looked it in their brilliant sweaters against the backdrop of snow and mountains. And with them were the girls. Beautiful girls from England, Denmark, Finland, Germany, everywhere. I stopped to buy some snow boots and a round red knitted cap with a white bobble on top. Catching my reflection in the glass doors of the hotel, I thought I looked like a fugitive from Snow White and the Seven Dwarves. It was time, I decided, for Grumpy to make contact with the man who was paying for the daft hat and long boots.
I've told him about the girl, but not Jean-Claude.
Good. Good, excellent. You must find a pretext to prevent Mr. Marshall from indulging in any further escapades. Once you locate him, I must be notified. I will know what to do. Congratulations on your progress, Inspector. But remember, discretion. He may do something regrettable if he finds himself cornered unexpectedly.
Like what?
Just remember, we are trying to protect him.
And the interest of the Sopexique.
Of course. Telephone me the moment you have any further news.
Mr. Canisius, what do you think Jean-Claude might do?
Difficult to say. He is, a disturbed man. Goodbye.
Bye.
The mountain air made me sleepy. My feet hurt from the new snow boots. I read the local paper, account of the crimes that kept Mr. Bratfish so busy. My eyelids kept trying to bring down the shutters on the day. I went to bed. Almost asleep, I thought about Jean-Claude. Disturbed, Canisius had said. What about Dagmar, the Tansmarican? Brave, impulsive, meeting a man. Impulsively joining her life to that of a stranger. For love. And his wife, Anne-Marie. She'd warned me not to take Canisius' words as being all there was of the truth. I gave up. Skied down a gentle incline into a deep hollow of sleep.
Yes? Yes, come in.
Good morning. Good snow today.
Morning. Good. Just on the bed. Thanks. Hey, miss!
But she'd gone. By mistake, I'd been given brioche jam and coffee for two. Someone else's order. Oh, well. I wandered into the bathroom, came back into the bedroom, and discovered the reason for the second breakfast. Anne-Marie was sitting on the bed, pouring coffee.
Good morning. I hope you don't mind a guest for breakfast. Black or milk?
Black. How did you find me?
I thought you were the detective. Brioche?
Canisius.
He told me every last detail. My plane landed 2 hours ago. Here, drink your coffee.
Thanks.
She looked very young, in black trousers and sweater. I could see the girl she'd been 15 years ago, who'd met and married Jean-Claude Marshall.
Canisius enjoys telling people things they will find disagreeable. He told me Jean-Claude had a girl with him. Who is she? Some slut off the ski slopes?
I don't know. She comes from Köln. He met her there. She's 18 years old. Shop assistant.
Really?
Very pretty. Good at things like dancing and skating, her father said. Her name's Dagmar.
A shop assistant? There must be something wrong with him. That's why I came. You don't mind, do you?
Madame, he's your husband. I've been ordered to find him, that's all.
But it isn't a crime, is it, running off with German shop assistants?
Not unless he used violence of some sort, which isn't likely. He's committed no crime, just an imprudence, perhaps.
Wasn't it Talleyrand who said that imprudence was worse than a crime?
I think he was talking about something that was both. I need to shave.
Go ahead, don't mind me.
I felt oafish, hemmed in. Having this woman hanging around wouldn't make things any easier. She came into the bathroom, watched me. I felt like a specimen in a zoo.
Is it impertinent to ask what you propose to do?
Have a shower.
Well, they take all day.
She left. She took the hint and left.
What's this?
A sweater. That V-neck thing is no good for the mountains. You need trousers, too. The boots will do, I suppose.
I have to tell you two things, Mrs. Marshall. Firstly, I'm a policeman and can't accept any sort of gift. Secondly, I don't take presents from women in public or private life. I also must say I usually drink coffee in the morning only with my wife.
How stuffy you sound. If this girl is as stupid as you, Jean-Claude will simply put her on the train home. You'll never be able to ski if you stay stuffy, stupid and Dutch.
I don't want to ski. I don't intend to ski.
You're on the slope. Ski or stay sitting on your dead Dutch arse. Put the sweater on and stop this crap about gifts. I know Canisius is paying your bills.
Why are you acting like this towards me? Are you jealous? Hoping to meet Jean-Claude and make him jealous of me?
Put the damn thing on, then comb your hair before it dries into a scrubbing brush.
So, I had a choice. Ski or sit on my dead Dutch arse. I picked up the sweater and started putting it on. It smelled rich and expensive. While I had it over my head, I felt two strong arms come around me from behind. I felt her soft breasts and hard belly hug against me. She was firm and muscular. It felt good. Then I was released. I emerged from the heavy woolen sweater, took a great gulp of air. Anne-Marie lay on the bed doing leg lifts as if nothing had occurred.
I hope I meet this shop assistant, this beauty, this pisslinger. I hope I see her in the middle of the Olympic piste. I'll knock her off her damn skis.
This is a nice sweater. I like it.
It's a gift.
You're a downhill girl.
When I shuss, I shuss.
He could be anywhere in Austria.
There's a women's competition starting today. He'll want to look over this year's crop.
You were one of those girls?
15 seasons ago. I can still ski faster than any bitch of a shop assistant. He knows it. Why don't you forget you're a policeman? Let me teach you to ski.
All right.
Good.
She punched my arm, seemingly vibrant at the prospect of teaching a dead-ass Dutchman to ski. I asked myself, who the hell was she trying to kid? It was the first time I'd seen a downhill competition. I liked the way the girls hurtled round the curve, biting their skis in to grip the snow, leaning over against the centrifugal forces. Anne-Marie seemed less than impressed by the race leader.
Stump legs, stump pussy. Much sex appeal as the dregs of last night's beer.
There's about 10,000 people in the huge snow-covered valley. About 2,000 were clustered around the finish. I trained my binoculars on this crowd, moved from one healthily glowing face to the next. I focused on a couple moving away towards the rows of parked cars. That could be them, I decided. The girl wearing a big white fur hat. Man was now loading skis onto a red station wagon. I couldn't see his profile, let alone his face. I waited for him to turn. Then my binoculars were snatched from me. Anne-Marie had noticed what I was doing. The red auto backed and shot away down the valley road. It was a Fiat station wagon. I had its number.
So, what's it then?
I couldn't see. He, the man, was stooping to get into the car.
The Austrian police can pick that auto up in half an hour.
Don't be such an idiot. Call them and the whole damn thing comes out into the open just for one stupid slut. You can't do that. You don't need to. They'll be back tomorrow for the slalom.
Let's get them roped in straight away. They could have seen us, recognised you. Let's stop this. Let's pull them in.
Stop, please. This is just what Canisius wants. Please, please, come back to the car. Don't do anything until we've talked.
We drove more or less in silence back to her hotel. She stopped at reception, asked for a bottle of whiskey and two glasses to be sent up to her room. I felt as if I was at the top of a ski run. Below me lay all the gates with their fluttering flags, just waiting to be negotiated at breakneck speed.
I'm going to ask you to stop, to leave Jean-Claude alone altogether. Go home and forget him. I have a right to ask that. I'm his wife, after all. Don't bother with Canisius. I'll deal with him.
It's not that easy.
He's committed no crime.
I'm a police officer acting under instructions.
Why do you think you were given those instructions?
I don't need to think about that.
When I first met you in Amsterdam, I could see you didn't believe in official claptrap. You know it's a pretext.
Of course it is. I've never known of the police being used in this way.
Why do you think it was done? Why was someone of your rank sent after Jean-Claude?
Something to do with the huge amount of money your husband could control. Canisius and his financial friends terrified about a loose cannon destroying their business. I don't know. Using SOPEX billions to give the third world a square meal.
Have you sympathy with their point of view?
I'm not paid to express sympathy for any point of view.
Have some more whiskey.
No.
Suppose you were paid to have sympathies. I have a great deal of money. I will pay you to be less uncommitted.
Sorry.
Although I'd said no, she came over to me, bent down to fill my glass. An extremely attractive woman. Very much within my reach. It was very tempting. She sat next to me. She smelt of healthy woman. A faint mix of sweat and perfume. There was the smell of wool from her expensive sweater. Ski wax, leather, whiskey.
Suppose I was to explain everything to you in bed. Canisius and his cohorts are very clever, you know. Take my clothes off, please.
I can remember a woman in Amsterdam saying she was quite Spanish about such things. Well, I have to say, here, so am I.
You think Canisius has something on Jean-Claude and me, don't you? You want me to tell you about it, don't you? And that's not all you want.
I want to meet Mr. Marshall. He can tell me all I want to know. If he's planning to go and see the girl slalom tomorrow, I'll be waiting for him. If he's not there, I'll turn the whole of Austria upside down till he pops out. The German police are watching every border. They want this girl, and so do I. Going to bed with you would be very nice. And there's only one thing I want more. To talk to your husband.
Very well. You may be right. We'll see.
I'll see you tomorrow morning. Thanks for the whiskey.
There was a lot of tension waiting for the slalom to begin. Last big competition of the season. The Austrian girls had gained a slight edge in the downhill the day before, but would the French girls steal it back with their superior slalom technique? I couldn't care less. I'd located a red Fiat station wagon parked near the helicopter. Anne-Marie was next to me, carrying her skis on her shoulder.
10 centimeters fell during the night. It's married well to the old stuff. It's good powder, very fast-paced. I'm going to have a go. I'll go up to the top.
I'll stay here.
No, suit yourself.
I turned my field glasses on the group climbing into the ever-moving chairlifts. A white fur hat caught my eye. A man sitting alongside her that might be Jean-Claude, or might not. I decided to find out and ran towards the ski lift, slithering, sliding. I caught a wildly swinging chair and began to be borne up the hill.
Icy patches. They think it'll favor the French girls. There's the course. You're looking the wrong way.
Yes.
Looking for someone?
A couple I'd like to catch up with.
Friends?
Not even acquaintances.
Here we go. Hoopla! Ah!
Anne-Marie.
So you did come. Watch me shoot.
Not yet, wait.
Why?
The girl in the white fur hat. Let's...
Jean-Claude!
Jean-Claude heard the shriek, saw his wife, saw me. He moved without hesitation, put his hand on the back of the girl in the fur hat and propelled her down the slope. He then took his batons and began to ski with impressive ease after the Tanz Marichen.
Go after them! Damn you, I have to talk to them. I have to talk to him. I must. Go! What are you waiting for?
finally she took off after them. Went with a great swoop, skiing fast, keeping an impressive line. I ran back to the lift, too fast, lost my footing, fell. Quite a comic turn. I caught a flying bucket chair and clattered down.
Anne-Marie, where are they? How am I down ahead of you?
I had a sturt, a royal one. I looked at the girl instead of the track. Lost both skis. You had one too?
Done my shoulder no good.
Someone fix the bloody helicopter!
That's my husband! That's Jean-Claude! That's Jean-Claude!
Ah, Inspector. Oh, I thought we'd found your missing millionaire. Instead, we just have their belongings. Lots of new clothes, roses flown in from Holland. Expensive. No runaway lovers.
Did you get the address of this chalet from the hire car registration?
Yes. Careless.
He doesn't care. What about your helicopter?
Oh, found at the head of the valley. They must have skied down from there.
But not to here. Where, then? Over the mountains, out of Austria?
Oh, impossible. There are avalanche conditions. Your man would know that. Oh, we'll get them tomorrow. Airports, trains, borders. They can't get out of Austria.
I didn't think they could get off the ski slope, but they did. Jean-Claude is resourceful and seems to be running scared.
Come. Did you find them?
No. Just a chalet they'd used.
Probably belongs to one of Jean-Claude's business friends.
Yeah, probably. May I sit down?
I suppose.
Oh, drinking whiskey.
Have some.
Thank you. You?
No.
Oh, to happy landings. A helicopter's been found. No sign of our chums.
They're not under my bed.
Why did you warn him, Anne-Marie?
Did I?
Oh, yes, yes, you did.
Maybe I couldn't bear to see him arrested by a common policeman. You won't catch him again. He'll have time to tire of his counter girl.
And go back to you?
Yes. As always. Go back to Amsterdam, Mr. van der Valk. Make your report. Stop playing Canisius's game. Stop hounding my husband.
When we were at the top of that damn slope, he saw you. He saw me. There was fear. Fear of what?
Mm-hmm.
Maybe of having to return to reality. Fear that the romantic idyll was over. Fear that he must return to being who he was.
Who he is.
The life your husband has bores him. To run off because he was sick of it makes sense to me. What doesn't make sense is the part the girl has in all this. Does she know about you? About Canisius? These jealousies, you as a wife, Canisius as a man who really runs the Suffexique. I've wondered why I was sent after Jean-Claude. Was it to provoke him? Did Canisius hope for publicity so that he could discredit Jean-Claude to his father? Canisius wants control of the Suffexique, yes?
So long for you to reach the obvious.
Jean-Claude and Dagmar must have seemed heaven sent for Canisius. Did Canisius ring you up to taunt you a little? Is that why you rushed here?
I came here to help my husband.
By seducing me?
Duty takes strange forms.
When your husband saw me, his first thought was to save the girl, to keep the girl. He pushed her clear. That was his first reaction.
You're lying.
No, Mrs. Marshall. Whatever's happening with the Tanzmariken and your husband is not casual, and perhaps not temporary.
You mean love? Jean-Claude and her?
It's what I saw. I have a lot of experience as a common policeman. I think he cares for her.
You bore me, Inspector. Get out of my room.
Thank you. For the whiskey.
I'd heard her crying. I know, caused by my unprofessional behaviour. Yes, I agree. It was the damn case. Not really a police case at all. Just a web of human jealousies around a man who had everything and cared for nothing. Had he met someone he cared about? Would she be sacrificed on the altar of his boredom? The town was alive. The ski teams were celebrating the end of training for the season. A cold wind was blowing. I went to bed. Couldn't sleep, shoulder throbbing. I got up, wandered the streets. Found myself at the railway station waiting room. Sat smoking, thinking those thoughts that only seemed to come at 5 in the morning. Thoughts about passion between a middle-aged man and a young woman. A crown prince like Marshall. A girl like Dagmar. Myling. That was the parallel I'd been searching for. A middle-aged man seeing a girl in love with life. Did he covet that? Want it from her? At Myling, the long white gloves, red roses, the gloomy hunting lodge in the snow, and the sound of waltzes in the Wienerwald, the soft chimes of 18th century clocks, and the echo of 2 revolver shots. An obscure intrigue that might have been political. Was it in anyone's interest that the unstable Crown Prince Rudolf should not succeed his father to the imperial throne? I made my way back through the cold, dank Innsbruck streets to my hotel. My last thought before sleep was that I must save the Tanzmariechen from the Crown Prince.
Inspector.
The Bradfish, yeah?
Anything?
Oh, no, there's nothing. No sightings. I don't understand. Where are they?
How do ski teams travel? In a block, or do they scatter?
Some do both. The French have a whole gang, caravan and their bus.
Bus?
Yeah, they shove all their equipment in an ordinary tourist bus. It stays with them all season.
What route would they take back to France?
Shortest way, I suppose. Arlberg, turn down towards the Saint-Gothard, Furka Valley, Rhone Valley.
Can you check with some field stations for me?
Yeah, you want to talk to them?
Yes. Start with Feldkirch.
The following day, I'd left Austria and was in Chamonix, in the house of a ski journalist who'd got back from Innsbruck the night before. A muscular man of 45 with a fine mountain tan and gentian blue eyes shambled in.
You're a policeman, my wife said.
It's unofficial for the present. I'm Inspector van der Valk.
A geezer, eh?
Yes, I checked with the Chamonix Chamber of Commerce. You're the reporter who writes about skiing.
Yes, what...
How was the drive from Innsbruck?
Long enough. Roads weren't too bad.
You've been around the circuit a good few years.
I used to be a skier myself. Never that good, but I'm still in the business.
No man named Marshall?
Probably. Common enough name. Skier.
Playboy style, but pretty good 10-15 years back.
Marshall, yes, of course. Jean-Claude. Yeah, he was 5th at Kitzbühel when I was 7th. Didn't practice enough. Might have been champion otherwise. Had lots of money.
He was in Innsbruck.
Was he?
Yeah, and in Chamonix yesterday.
Yeah, old stamping ground. Why the interest?
I just wondered if it was you that gave him the lift.
Don't understand.
Jean-Claude hitched a ride with the caravan of the French team. The journalists who followed the bus would be a perfect cover. The border guards know you all.
Yeah, I suppose so.
I've checked with a couple of sports guys, and one mentioned that you were with a couple. Tall man, pretty girl, German, he thought.
What's he done? Not paid a parking fine?
Borrowed a helicopter.
That was Jean-Claude.
Yes, but that's not it. Do you have any children, Mr. Serrier?
A daughter, 12.
Mm-hmm. Does she ski?
Yeah.
Suppose she'd gone to Innsbruck and then vanished. The girl Marshall was with is signalled as missing. Her parents are worried in the same way as you'd be.
It has nothing to do with me.
Had you known, would you have been so quick to offer them a lift out of Austria? I don't care if you did help them, but just tell me straight.
He said he'd been skiing and was tired. He had no auto, and would I give him a lift home? I agreed, naturally.
Did you talk?
Not much. shared the driving. When one was at the wheel, the other slept.
And the girl?
She was quiet. They were close, affectionate. Jean-Claude was happy.
That's because he had the police of three countries looking out for him.
We were waved through. They know me, know my car. They pointed at the sleeping couple. I just said they were friends. No need to wake them up.
That's what he gambled on. Where did they go?
I dropped them off at the station.
Aiming where?
Well, points north, Besançon, beyond. All right. He has a cottage or something in the Vosges.
Know the address?
No.
Phone number?
There isn't a phone
number. Whereabouts in the Vosges?
Fred, I don't know.
Well, how do you know there's no phone there?
You think Jean-Claude's heading for trouble?
Yes. He's left his wife, left his job.
I have the phone number of a cafe. He said they could give him a message.
In case someone like me came after him here, you were supposed to warn him?
Jean-Claude should have told me what was going on.
Yes. Please don't telephone him after I leave. That would involve you in serious matters.
Here. I haven't got his number now. You have.
The train north from Chamonix to Strasbourg is a longish ride, but not dull. The Alps give way to the Jura, and the Jura to the Belfort Gap. And from the Belfort onwards, there are the Vosges on one's left. It was evening when I got to Strasbourg. I stayed at a pretty ordinary hotel near the station. I liked the look of Strasbourg. Wished I could share it with Arlette. It suddenly seemed a long time since she'd packed my little bag and brushed the shoulders of my best brown suit.
Arlette, hello. I'm in Strasbourg. Interesting here. Very eurocratic. We'll go together sometime.
You're getting around, aren't you? How's the skiing coming along?
Don't mention snow. My shoulder still hurts.
Oh, you fell on the ski slope?
No, by the ski lift. No, don't laugh. I'm sick of mountains. All I want to see at the moment is you and Amsterdam on a rainy day.
When do you think you'll be home?
Well, I might get finished tomorrow, with any luck. This fellow I'm hunting runs around like a rabbit. I found out where he's holed up. Tomorrow I'll have to face them with... well, with things. No doubt the girl will hate me.
That's to be expected.
Yes. You all right?
Yes. Tired of being widowed.
I'll ring tomorrow. I should know something by then.
The next day there was snow. Great wet globs of the stuff. Still, it didn't stick to the streets of Strasbourg. But it was cold. I struggled into the sweater Anne-Marie had bought me. Why had she tried to seduce me? Why had she shrieked that warning to Jean-Claude? I thought I'd guessed the right answers, but now nothing seemed to fit anymore. It was my mood being affected by the damn snow. I found Jean-Claude's village, Saverne, received directions from the grocer shop and arrived at a red house with a black Lancia, 2.5 litre, parked outside. The snow all around the house was undisturbed. I went down the side of the house. It was a backyard that led to a kitchen. The door opened. I went in. No sign of activity. It was an ordinary house. At first, I thought I'd been given the wrong address, but in the living room, there were antique knick-knacks and 6 porcelain figures on a table. That was Jean-Claude's style. By a window seat was another table displaying a collection of gemstones, all mounted carefully on wood. Amethysts from Brazil, jade from Tibet, rock crystal worth more than its weight in uncut diamonds. In the hallway, on one of those ornate weapon stands, lay a heavy rifle. Every Frenchman keeps a rifle in the country, handy to shoot rats with. Usually a .22, but this was a gun you could shoot lions with. It was time to go upstairs. Light filtered through the shutters of the main bedroom. There were 2 people in bed. I'd finally caught up with Jean-Claude and the Tanzmariechen. Neither moved as I approached them. They were either asleep or dead. Then I noticed the trace of a sharp scent that stings inside your nose. The smell which comes from two Copper Jacket 765 pistol cartridges. Myling. Well, you can imagine the rest. The gendarmerie at the local, the mob descending, doctor, magistrate, the technical men. They all buzzed around me. I'd found a paperback of Baudelaire's poems. I read them while I waited for the big boys from Strasbourg to arrive. I am like the king of the rainy country, rich and impotent, young and very old, who despises the bowing down of his preceptors, who is bored with his dogs, as with all his other creatures. This cruelly ill man, his fleur-de-lis bed has become a tomb, the dulled stupor of a corpse, in which blood no longer flows, but Lethe's green water. I was suggested I travel to Strasbourg and tell my story of the death of this sad king.
Polizei Präsidium Köln, Herr Stößel, please. Heinz van der Valk, I'm in Strasbourg. End of line, I'm afraid. They're both dead. Double suicide. You'll have to get hold of the girl's father and bring him here for identification. Office of Commissar Vorleck in Strasbourg.
Stößel was a good cop. Concerned, but unemotional. I pictured the parents of the Tanzmärchen watching the policemen walk into their house with news of their daughter. I rang Anne-Marie. Still not there. I tried Canisius again. Once more got some pen pusher who thought he had a part to play in maintaining the inscrutability of the Supexique.
Look, Mr. Buy and Sell, you tell me where I can get hold of Canisius, or you'll have a new job picking up ice cream cartons with a pointed stick.
Mr. Canisius is inspecting property in Spain. On these occasions, he generally stays at the Prince de Galles in Biarritz.
Thank you.
Eventually, Dagmar's father and Anne-Marie arrived, formally identified the bodies, and went back to sign the papers at Volek's office. Dagmar's father just sat there. Anne-Marie had a contained, angry brilliance about her. She said nothing. Just watched us all.
Please sign, sir. Thank you. Mrs. Marshall. Yes, the release papers will need to be countersigned by the procurer.
If I understand rightly, Inspector van der Valk, they were in bed together when they were found. This man and my daughter.
Yes, Herr Spiegelman.
They were making love when he shot her?
I believe so.
You think he loved her?
For God's sake!
Yes. Yes, I think he did.
How can he say that?
Mrs. Marshall, please, this is not easy.
I believe that at the time of his death, he loved her.
She had a week's happiness. A wonderful holiday in the mountains. All kinds of clothes. The pleasure of skiing. A shower of pleasures and generous presents. Expensive cars. Even dodging about would seem like an exciting adventure. A romantic slice of life and a romantic death. I just don't understand why...
Why? Nobody could answer. He sat there, crumpled in misery. Then stood and slowly left the room. Anne-Marie looked incandescent. Inspector Vorleck finally addressed her.
Mrs. Marshall, you have the right to query my findings, to see the doctor's report. Anything you wish. Do you wish to make any statement? or pose any question before these papers go to the procureur for his signature?
No. I would like to see the house. I would like Inspector van der Valk to show it to me.
I will inform the gendarmerie.
I have my car.
I'll join you in a minute or two, Anne-Marie.
You wish to conspire together? Assess how I am? Whether I might kill myself? Policeman!
You don't have to do that.
No, she has a right to see. I owe her that.
I'll phone to clear entry into the house.
After that, it's finished for me. I'll trot on back to Amsterdam. Can you copy the papers? I need to enclose them with my report.
Certainly.
We drove in her grey BMW. It takes about half an hour from Strasbourg to the village of Saverne. She didn't speak a word to me, just followed my instructions, as if we were driving in a rally. When we reached the house, a gendarme saluted, gave me the keys, and left. It was miserable how the friendly little house had lost all its warmth. We went into the room with the precious stones. Anne-Marie stared about her, taking in all objects. Finally, that cold, classic profile turned back to me, her eyes hard with savage anger.
You incompetent! You imbecile! I told you to stop! I warned you that you couldn't see the consequences, lout! Stupid lout! You went on blundering along, and now you see the result. I offered you money. You could have more than you've ever earned in your life, all in one hand. I offered you myself. Do you think I'm the kind of woman to sleep with the first common lout she meets at a winter sports station? You, the honest, stupid copper. You had to find him because that's what you were told to do. Was there ever such a fool as you?
You think he killed himself because he knew I was after him?
He didn't kill himself. He was killed.
Really? Who by? You?
Canisius.
He was in Biarritz.
Canisius killed him through years of pressure. You were just the instrument Canisius used to push Jean-Claude over the edge.
I thought at first Jean-Claude was just a weakling who ran away because he couldn't stand up to Canisius. But what about you, Anne-Marie? Did you pressure him too? Did you goad him to fight back, to gain control of what is rightfully his? You didn't want me to find your husband. You wanted to reach him first.
Sopex belonged to him. To me. Take me upstairs. I want something from you. Take me upstairs.
For a crazy moment, I thought she wanted to make love to me, in the bed that had held her dead husband. She hurried into the hall, passed the rifle lying on its stand, ran up the stairs. When I caught her up, she was standing beside the bed, looking down at a pair of blood-stained pillows.
You must tell me what is the truth.
I don't know. I haven't been dead long. The stove in the kitchen still had warmth in it.
Tell me how they were. Naked?
Yes.
Holding each other?
Anne-Marie.
Tell me, you bastard, you owe me... Tell me how they were, give me that.
I believe he shot her without warning.
At the height of lovemaking?
Perhaps. Yes, it seems likely.
Where was the wound?
To her left temple. Her hair had been brushed down as if to cover the damage.
He would do that gently. He was a gentle lover. Always after the moment he would straighten my hair, kiss my forehead. He would do that to me. Yes. He put his arm around me, looked down at my face, then held the gun to my head and...
Anne-Marie, stop it!
Leave me!
Stop it!
Leave me! Leave me!
She was jealous. She loved Jean-Claude. She had wanted to be the one dead in his arms. I heard the door bang below. The car start outside. Damn, that meant I'd be stranded.
I ran down the stairs, heard the car drive away at speed. I stopped in the hallway and noticed something missing. The rifle. Anne-Marie had taken the rifle away with her. Where would she go? While I waited for a police car to arrive, I found a map and traced all possible routes, my finger tracing to Paris, Bordeaux, La Rochelle. Then it traced down and stopped in an angle formed by the French and Spanish coasts. Biarritz. Did Anne-Marie know Biarritz? She might well know Canisius stayed at the Prince de Galles. She'd taken the rifle for a reason. Either to kill herself or Canisius. Or both. Two days later, I was sitting in a car outside the Prince de Galles in the sunshine of Biarritz. I checked with Amsterdam. Anne-Marie had not returned. Like her husband before her, she had disappeared without explanation. Then I saw what I thought was the explanation emerge from the hotel. Immaculate in cream suit, straw-coloured shoes, a Panama hat with a maroon band. With Canisius was an oily-haired business type fanning himself with his hat. It must have been 20 degrees in the sunshine. Snow to sun. No need for Anne-Marie's sweater. Their car, an open-top Mercedes, complete with chauffeur in uniform, moved sedately away into the traffic. I followed them out of town and along the coast road through country perfect for assassination. Thick Mediterranean vegetation with cork oaks, umbrella pine, on what must be the foothills of the Pyrenees. The Mercedes slowed for the frontier post. There was perfect shooting cover. But nothing happened. The Mercedes went through, unharmed. I didn't go through. I'd seen no sign of the BMW, though. Maybe it was a crazy idea, my believing Anne-Marie was waiting to take a pop at Canisius. I tried to think what I would do if she was here. This wasn't an ideal spot, but back along the road, the slope of the hillside was less severe. I backed the Renault and returned slowly. I realized I must be near the river Bidassoa. Napoleon's marshals had once crossed there. Junot, Soult. Ahead of me, a fair-sized rock had tumbled down onto the road. I stopped, went out to shift it, and felt eyes watching me. This was a rehearsal for when Canisius returned a couple of hours later. Somewhere up on the hillside, I was convinced there was a Mauser rifle trained on me. I shifted the rock, walked sweating back to the car, but at the last minute, I noticed a wink of sunlight on a rifle barrel halfway up the slope. I ducked off the road and began to climb.
Anne-Marie! Anne-Marie! Don't do this! Anne-Marie! This isn't the way! Anne-Marie!
And here we are.
Yes. Seeing you were shot for me, I've done one or two things for you. I had a colleague of yours down from Amsterdam, Chief Inspector Kahn.
Yeah, he'd enjoy the trip. Good expenses.
We interviewed Canisius several times. Rattled chains at him, told him to hold himself at the disposition of the examining magistrate. Even sent him a summons. I didn't get far until I changed tack. I took your wife along to see Mr. Canisius.
I'll let.
Let's bring her in. A cigarette?
No. Oh.
I'll let.
You look tired.
I'm okay. Too much talk.
Too many cigarettes.
First, I showed Canisius the bullet that had travelled through you. That made him nervous. But your wife's presence seemed to disturb him more. That type, the law books don't frighten him, but if you can scare him physically, they melt. I stressed how near Anne-Marie had been to killing him.
The thought made him melt like ice cream in the sun.
The last time I saw him, he looked like an ice cream.
Canisius knew Anne-Marie very well. At work, he did everything he could to disillusion Jean-Claude with the world of business, knowing that at home, Anne-Marie would be nagging at him to defend his rightful place as heir to the family firm.
Yes. When Jean-Claude finally had enough of them both and disappeared, Canisius pulled some strings to get me sent after him in the hope that some scandal would emerge that he could use to discredit Jean-Claude further with the Sophexique.
When Jean-Claude met the German girl, Canisius couldn't help taunting Anne-Marie. Realizing the disappearance was a serious threat to her hopes, she tried to reach her husband, but she was too late. I think you were right. Anne-Marie did love him, and the fact that he chose another woman to die with sent her off the rails.
They were both doomed. The world we live in, it's the Canisiuses who win.
Not always.
Commissar Lira has done a little bargaining on your behalf.
Your social security pays your hospital bill, but it doesn't pay you for the pain. Why Canisius talked so freely was due, I feel, to the presence of your wife.
He seemed a little nervous of women.
Can you wonder?
You will walk again, but there is to be a pension for continuing disability.
We persuaded Canisius to triple it.
What?
It's all in writing. Canisius' signature, Sopek's money.
Oh, he'd never do that.
It's true he refused, but I'm afraid your wife lost her patience with his shilly-shallying.
Alette, what did you do?
Lost my temper.
Yes?
I stood up, walked across, looked Mr. Canisius in the eye and said for 2 bright pins I'd shoot him myself. Oh, my leg.
In King of the Rainy Country by Nicholas Freeling, Inspector van der Valk was played by Martin Jarvis and Anne-Marie by Jackie Smith-Wood. Canisius was Michael Fitzgerald, Arlette, Sonny Ormond, Lyra, Roger Hume, Stoessel, Alan Devereux, Miss Kramer, Gillian Goodman, Commissaris, Jeff Searle, Sereye, Leon Tanner, Volek, Simon Carter, and the Doctor, David Van. Other parts were played by members of the cast. King of the Rainy Country was dramatized for radio and directed at our Pebble Mill Studios by Philip Martin.